Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, July the 6th. Well, normally we do our chat with Bill Katz on Monday. So this week we're going to call it Monday on Wednesday with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into with Bill, lots of stuff going on. So let's go right to Bill. Bill, it's 100 degrees in Dallas, Texas, and we'll be 100 degrees until Sunday. So triple digits down here, Bill.
Well, I think we all know what's causing this, and I think it's about time it was called out. I think that there are two things that are causing this. One is television sets, and the other is Chevrolets. I have discovered this through my own independent research. Every time a Chevrolet passes my residence, the temperature goes up. I know this. I just feel it. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I apologize. My fault. I hit the wrong button. Now, I was going to say that, yes, you're correct. You're correct that it is the Chevrolet, unless it's an electric one, of course, and it doesn't do that.
Oh, yes. Yes, but the electric, we saw one electric Chevrolet here about 3 months ago, and that was the last time we saw an electric Chevrolet. I don't know who buys them. I really have never been in one, but Kamala Harris assures us that it's Chevrolet that's doing this. And you know, when she says something, we all know that it's true.
That's correct. Now, I did hear something. I was listening to a automobile show the last couple of days that I enjoy listening to. And the cost of there's a new, brand new electric truck. You know, trucks are very popular in Texas, as you know. And this particular, the cost of this one, Bill, was $94,000.
Yes, that's right.
And the range of the truck is 300. So the guy said it's a beautiful car. It drives beautifully. But if you're going to go to San Antonio, make sure you stop somewhere and have lunch because it takes that long to charge it up.
Oh, absolutely. We're nowhere near green energy. I mean, they talk about it as if it's just around the corner. It is not. The requirements are range, safety. The requirements are also reasonable cost. I mean, I don't know who these people in Washington think live in this country, but apparently they think it's all their rich friends and that's it. But the fact is very few people can afford an electric car today, very few. And I say, you can do it over time and live in a smaller residence and maybe spend so much money on ice cream or something like that. But they have no connection at all with the country. I think they're failing miserably. I'm just hoping, though, you know, the midterm elections are 4 months away. That is a short period, but it's about four lifetimes in politics. I'm just hoping that the Republican Party holds until November, because I get the feeling that they are not as active out there campaigning as they should be. They have to work as if they're 20 points behind, because the Democrats are not going to just give this up automatically. I mean, they see their future in real jeopardy, and they're going to fight and they're going to say anything they want to, whether it's true or not, because they know that there is an element of the American press that will support them. If you said the moon was made of green cheese, they'd say, yes, we had a portion yesterday. I think, once again, the Republicans may turn out to be too gentlemanly in the way they pursue it. They have got to really go after this ridiculous administration. And also, there was talk at one time, I don't know if it's going to happen, that they're going to come up with a new contract with America. I assume that is scheduled for the fall campaign, but I sure hope it comes off because they need a positive message.
That's right. No, you're right. And of course, as I remember when Gingrich did it in 94, it did come up later because you have to wait until the primaries, I guess, happen in different states. But I'm with you 100%. The Republicans have to have a reason to people to vote for them. Now, Biden is certainly giving them enough reasons, but you still have to win the election. You cannot expect the other guy to lose it. One thing, getting back to the electric car, I was listening again to this gentleman on the radio, and he was saying that by 2035, the best estimate is by 2035, 30% of the cars in the United States are electric. So that still means that the overwhelming majority are still going to fill up the old-fashioned way. So I sure hope they remember that when they build refineries, Bill.
Well, you know, yes. And if I were in the energy industry today, I'm not so sure I'd know what to do. I mean, this is an administration heavily influenced by environmental fanatics who know nothing about the subject. And of course, their attitude in the Democratic Party, after all, it is an urban-based party, is that people shouldn't have cars. They should use public transportation like a good socialist country. And they don't understand or care about their own country. They don't care about anybody who lives outside their little zone of comfort. And I think it is possible for the Republicans to win a really significant victory if they get on top of everything and fight like crazy.
That's right.
This could be a very defining election. Now, if they do win and take the House, that's nice, but if they take the House and not take the Senate, that's bad. The Senate is where judges are confirmed, and you can have a one-vote majority in the Senate and change the course of American history. So we have to fight for both, win both, and then come back and win the presidency in 2024. We should never forget the advantages the Democrats have, not only in population centers, but in press support, and also the fact that when they are in office, they write checks to people. And writing checks to people is probably the best way of getting votes, and they're writing as many checks as possible. For goodness sakes, I've heard just in the last few days that illegal immigrants coming across the border are going to have all kinds of financial advantages and programs for them. I don't know why a native-born American or an American who is a real American citizen cannot have those advantages, but apparently they're going to take care of the illegals to make sure that they do what they're supposed to do, which is come to this country and vote Democratic.
Yes, that's the strategy. That's the strategy. It's flipping a little bit in South Texas, and we'll get to that in a minute, because I think in South Texas they're beginning to reject a lot of this illegal immigration. But I wanted to say one quick thing here, Bill, at the beginning. And one of the former presidents of the United States lives here in the Dallas area, President George W. Bush. He's 76 today, and he's always at the baseball game. So I always liked George W. Bush. I thought he had to deal with some very tough problems, but especially 9/11 and terrorism. And I supported him, so happy birthday, Mr. President. I hope he has a good birthday, Bill.
I certainly will echo those remarks. He led the country through an exceptionally difficult period and did it well. I mean, it is hard to achieve greatness in these days because you get savagely criticized so quickly. I don't know how history will record him, but I think he was a decent man in an office that required a decent man.
Yes, he was a very decent man, and I think he did a lot of decent things. And again, who knows what he'll look like in 50 years, but then there's always the Harry Truman example.
Oh, yes.
And he's certainly more popular than Harry Truman was when he left office. But I find lately here, the Bush family has been under attack from, elements in the Republican Party. And I personally do not subscribe to that because I think the Bush family is a good family. And they've done, I mean, they gave us two presidents. Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe they gave us too many. But I certainly thought that George W. did a very good job. The first Bush, I think, benefited somewhat from the Reagan mantle, if you will. But
yes.
I thought, you know, George W. had to deal with 9/11 and did a very good job with that. And Iraq, well, at least we know he doesn't have nuclear weapons now, Bill. At least
that's
we know
right.
that.
That's right. People forget that in going into Iraq, which is widely criticized, he did eliminate a massive threat to the Middle East and a massive threat to our interests there, because Iraq was not an unsophisticated country. They were working on nuclear weapons. The Israelis took out their first reactor. But, you know, once we invaded, they say, well, we didn't find any weapons of mass destruction. Well, that doesn't mean they weren't there, because we know they used them in the Iran war. And if we had a Saddam Hussein in power right now in Iraq, the Middle East would look much worse, and our forces there would be under much greater threat.
That's right. And if you just think about North Korea, how different North Korea would be if it didn't have a nuclear weapon. I mean, it probably wouldn't exist. You know, North Korea would not exist without a nuclear weapon, because that's all they have is a nuclear weapon. You think of Iraq, if Iraq had a nuclear weapon under Saddam Hussein, I have a feeling that the Israelis wouldn't put up with that, so there would have been a bigger war. You're right. I think history will be kind to George W., but anyway, he is a big baseball fan, and in that, I guess
sure.
I like that a lot about him. You know, he has not been that active in politics. In fact, I think he's done it the right way, which is to retire and retire, Bill.
Well, that's it. The usual tradition is that the president who leaves office goes back to private life and goes to some party meetings maybe and possibly a convention, but stays out of politics and stays out of criticism of his successor. And, yes, I think he has done it right.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so, too. Well, let's talk a little bit about the big issue here coming out of July 4th, Bill. I guess I'll say the word massacre. In Highland Park, which is, as we spoke on the phone the other day, it's a suburb, I believe, of Chicago or a town nearby
yes.
Chicago. And now I read today that it's, and you mentioned this as well, that the town has a very sizable Jewish-American community as well, which I didn't know that. I knew Skokie had it, but I didn't realize this town had it as well. But this young man who committed this massacre, Bill, how in the world this guy was allowed to buy a gun just points out to me that obviously the background check was not working. The red flags didn't go on. So, I mean, I don't want to hear about any more gun laws if we cannot enforce the ones we got, Bill.
Well, that's the point. These communities on the North Shore of Lake Michigan, the North Shore communities. I knew them because when I went to the University of Chicago, I would visit friends who lived out there. It's the area near Evanston where Northwestern University is, Skokie, Highland Park, Glencoe. I had friends in Glencoe. They all have the very legislation that so many people are advocating, and it didn't work. It just didn't work. People, when references got lost apparently, and reports of criminal activity, or if not criminal activity, suspicious activity by this individual who is now charged with the murders in Highland Park, apparently faded into nothingness. So you can put the laws on the books, but as you say, if they're not going to be enforced and enforced effectively, they're meaningless. And I think they ought to look at this as a perfect example of what happens when people are well-meaning, put laws on the books, and then never monitor them.
Right. But, Bill, the same thing happened in Buffalo, New York.
Yes.
Meaning the young man had a history of problems, even met with the police, and apparently nobody sent a memo to the people who do the background checks and say, hey, you better put this in the file of this young man. Had that information been in the file of the young man in Buffalo, he would have never been able to buy a gun. The same thing with the young man in Highland Park. They would have gone to buy a gun, but the police, or, you know, the police would have been alerted immediately, and they would have stepped in and said, why do you need to buy a gun? What's the problem? And that, of course, does not happen here. He's allowed to buy a gun. And then, of course, we need more gun laws, Bill.
Yes. Well, that's it. What it is you get these stage shows that are put on every time a horrible event like this occurs. The politicians immediately figure out what they can gain from this. And it's always the same thing on the Democratic side. Stop the madness. Stop the madness. Give us more gun laws. I mean, Kamala Harris, the presumed vice president of the United States, was out there immediately saying we need more laws. Help us to stop the madness. They can put all the laws they want on the books. It is not going to do a thing unless, number one, they are enforced, and number two, there is a facility to measure the effectiveness of these laws. I still maintain that the most important thing we can do is to protect targets, protect logical targets, to have the police well-trained, to have background checks that are meaningful, that actually contain the information they're supposed to have, and to have alert communities. I've always believed that every school, for example, should have armed guards. I mean, they say, you know, the pseudos come in and say, the pseudo-psychiatrists, well, this might traumatize the children. I don't think so. There was a study at Harvard that showed exactly the opposite, that they felt safer knowing there were armed police officers on the campus. Other than that, I don't know what to do. I mean, people will say, well, maybe we should just confiscate guns. I can't imagine that will have much of an effect in a country with 400 million guns.
Well, they couldn't even do it. I mean, they couldn't even pull that off. I mean, because that would mean that everybody, I guess, would have to turn in their guns. Good luck with that. That's all
yes,
I would say.
Yes, that's, Canada tried that, and they got very little cooperation. Now, I think Australia is set up as an example or presented as an example of gun confiscation that works. I would have to check that out very carefully. Because I don't, we would have to compare it to what the rate of crime was before the confiscation. If guns didn't exist, we would have no gun crimes. But if guns didn't exist, we'd have a hell of a lot more knife crimes. And that's what England found out when they tried to ban guns. They said, sure, you have fewer gun crimes, but a lot of knife crimes. There was a point, I don't recall when, but it was about 10 years ago, when New York was a safer city than London. And yet the British have all these bans on guns. People who want to commit crimes figure out a way. And they if they want to commit a murder, they figure out a way. It's sad and tragic, but they do. The point has been made also, for example, that Japan, which does not permit private gun ownership, that yes, very few gun crimes in Japan, but Japan also has the second highest suicide rate of any industrialized country. I don't know if there's a relationship between those two, but you got to look at the whole story, and the whole story is very, very difficult.
Right, and you also have to, when you make these comparisons with other countries, they love to, you know, the people on the gun control side always bring up these, you know, comparisons. Well, this doesn't happen in New Zealand or something like that. Well, probably no. It doesn't happen in New Zealand because they have a population of, 2 million people? And half of them, you know, live out apart from everybody else. So, I mean, there is something, of course, more complicated when you have as many people living together as we do in some of these cities. But we've always been a country with weapons, Bill. It's not like it just started last week. And yet somehow, I've lived here since 1964. And I don't remember these mass shootings happening really until recently. I mean, it seems like this is happening more in the last 10 than in the time before that I lived here, Bill.
I was reading once, and I'm not absolutely certain of the exact numbers here, but that during World War II, New York had a population approximately the same size as today. The population has changed in numbers very little in New York. About 8 million people, and I think the year that was tested or studied was 1943, and there were 42 murders in the city that year, 42. And there are all kinds of theories as to why. One, which seems to have a great deal of logic to it, is that there were a lot of young men off to war, And we're not in the city. That's one thing. But then, I mean, I think before Rudy Giuliani took office in early 1990s as mayor, the number had climbed to something a little over 2,000. And nobody wants to actually talk about the actual causes, which are cultural. These are cultural breakdowns in communities, and they allow this to happen. We have videotape shot just in the last week of gunmen in New York just shooting up a target, knowing that they will never be brought to justice. And, you know, there's an old saying in law enforcement about imprisonment, that the length of the sentence is not important. It's the certainty of the sentence that's important. That if a potential criminal doesn't feel he is going to be imprisoned, he will go out and do anything. But if that potential criminal believes he will be imprisoned for as little as 5 years, he will probably not commit the crime.
Right. A couple of things, Bill, that I think, at least in what happened to, you know, to me, is number one is when you hear about this crime and the fact that, you know, I was a big supporter of background checks and red flags. I think those are good ideas in theory. So I've always been a supporter of that. But if they're not going to be enforced, then I think what's going to happen more and more is that people are not going to believe the government, and they're just going to carry their own gun. And they're going to say, well, look, if I'm going to go with my family on a July 4th parade, I'm going to carry a gun because if anybody tries to kill me, I'll kill him first. And, you know, that sounds crazy, but, you know, I put myself in the place of the people in that parade. I mean, they were counting on the government to protect them, and the government didn't. I'm not blaming the police. The police is doing the best they can. But if society is not going to do background checks correctly, they're not going to do the red flags, well, then you got to start protecting yourself, Bill. It becomes really, in a way, the law of the jungle. I hate to say it, but I think you're going to see a huge increase in the number of people who buy guns because they're going to say, I got to protect myself because I cannot count on the bureaucracy to do it for me, Bill.
Well, you know, that is exactly what a lot of people have in mind, and I find it very interesting that some of the most important Supreme Court cases on gun rights for people asking their gun rights to be protected and even expanded have come from African Americans. The very famous Heller case from Washington, D.C., that asked for relief from some of the restrictions in Washington, D.C. that made it hard for people to have a private weapon. Mr. Heller was an African-American man who wanted to protect his home. So people, you know, make an assumption that the, quote, gun nuts, I put that word, that phrase in quotes, are a bunch of Western cowboys riding around on horses firing their guns in the air. It's not true at all. Many of the people most devoted to the Second Amendment just live in high crime areas, and they want protection, as you said.
That's right. Well, I mean, if you're going to go to a July 4th parade, and now you have to worry about people from a ceiling or a roof shooting at you or your family, I think the next July 4th parade, you're going to be prepared a little differently, Bill.
I think so. That's something that's important because we have a holiday coming up. Well, Labor Day is not a big celebration holiday. It's a holiday that is marked. But as we get into the fall, I certainly am concerned about the Thanksgiving Day parades or even anything else in between. It doesn't have to be a day of celebration. The shootings in Buffalo and other places have come on ordinary days. I certainly think that all houses of worship in America should watch their security. There are experts who advise on that sort of thing. It's a sad thing, and it's sad that we have to think about it, but we have to think about it.
Well, we have to think about it because, you know, the terrible situation in Highland Park where a couple took their two-year-old
yes.
to the July 4th parade. And now the two-year-old is an orphan, you know, because his parents were shot. Incredibly, he was not. I guess my guess is, without knowing all the information, is that the parents protected the two-year-old and literally, you know, protected him from the bullets.
Father,
I mean, I think that's what any parent would do. But
yes.
that's a two-year-old orphan who now all of a sudden has to deal with, you know, life. And I guess they found, I think it's a little boy, they found him just walking around, you know, completely lost and, and eventually they were able to put that together with the fact that his parents were killed. But, I mean, what a terrible situation, and it all started with a July 4th parade. I mean, who would have thought that a July 4th parade would be a dangerous thing, Bill?
Well, it is now. It is now. And also, remember, there was a parade recently in, now I've forgotten which state it was, but a man, you remember, drove through and
yes,
hit people
in Wisconsin.
With
Kenosha,
his car.
Kenosha,
in, yes, in Kenosha. Exactly, in Kenosha. And that was also a parade. I don't recall what it was commemorating, but I don't know what happened to the case. I mean, it seems to have disappeared.
Well, we certainly don't hear a lot about the guy or his motives.
No.
Up in Kenosha. So I hope that he's being processed. I had been up in that area a few months before that because I had a high school reunion up there nearby. And I had been in that area, and it's a very pretty area, by the way, up there. And so a lot of people that I knew, I had two friends of mine who were actually at the parade. Thankfully, they were not hurt, but they were there with their families. But if people now have to worry about their personal safety when they go out on something like a Christmas parade or a Thanksgiving parade, and my goodness, Halloween coming up in October, if parents have to worry about stuff like that, I think you're going to see a lot of mom and dads take security in their own hands, Bill, and I don't blame them.
No, I don't blame them at all. And, there are we ought to look around the world at what other countries do to prevent school shootings because there have been some terrible school shootings around the world. This is not the only country. I recall back, it was about 10 years ago, where there was an incident in Norway, a country that we normally associate with nonviolence, where 65 children, 65 were killed in one incident. And that's not a country where it's easy to get a gun. So,
exactly.
We ought to study exactly what should be done. And I think one of the things that's going to come up constantly if we do study it is the importance of observing young people who are acting strangely. And you have to be very careful not to invade civil liberties or to turn us into a police state or a surveillance state. But if teachers were encouraged to report on students, say to a principal or to a nurse, this kid, there's just something about him that isn't right, and maybe we ought to look into it. Maybe there could be some intervention. I don't know.
Well,
I'm not an expert.
It's not a perfect system, but I think that in Parkland, Florida, and Uvalde, Texas, in both of those cases, nobody was surprised when they learned who had done it. It's like nobody ever says, "Oh my gosh, he did it! My gosh, he was a 4.0 student who had gotten a scholarship to the University of Texas." No, that never happens.
Right.
It's
no,
always the same kid or the same profile.
Yes,
isn't
that
interesting?
Amazing. Because it is true. It's true because you always find out later that there were red flags all over the place.
Yes,
there were so many red flags.
It would have been a communist parade, Bill, if I may make a joke out of it. There were so many red flags, you would have thought it was, a May Day parade in Russia or something because it was ridiculous, all the red flags that we didn't pick up. Let me take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about President Biden and some of the other things going on. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I had to laugh a little bit during the break because I looked at my computer, and there's a warning that says heat wave. I don't need to see that on my computer to figure it out when it's 104 outside. I just checked. It's 104.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So I think the computer is maybe, I don't know, maybe they're just trying to be polite, but I think I know there's a heat wave going around here. Bill, I want to say something else too, tied into all of this crime, because yeah, we're talking about the young man in Highland Park, but there was another terrible weekend in Chicago. Apparently, New York is another problem as well. There just seems to be a lot of these cities where the crime problem doesn't go away. In fact, it gets worse. Philadelphia, another disaster.
Yes, and the mayor and you have all given up.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like you keep asking yourself. The governor of Illinois yesterday was saying how terrible this is, and we need to do something about this. I mean, if I was the governor of Illinois, I would resign in disgrace. His entire state is falling apart, Bill, and crime has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely, and in fact, there are companies now that are leaving Chicago because of crime, and yet nothing, there's no reaction, and once again, the press reports the story as a little story and moves on to its politically correct reporting. But absolutely, it's true. And, you know, Daniel Patrick Moynihan coined the term, I've forgotten the term.
Deviancy, right? Deviancy or something about...
Exactly. Defining deviancy down. And what happens over a time, he said, he was a sociologist before he was a U.S. senator, and it means that people get used to the bad conditions, and deviancy is defined down. In other words, oh, this isn't deviancy. This is the way we normally live with people shooting outside, and then it gets worse, and then they get used to that. People get used to low standards. They get used to living that way. It's a terrible thing, but that's human nature, and that's what's happening in many of these places. We also have a situation, as you said, it never seems to improve. I want to know why it never seems to improve, except when certain things are done. I still go back to the time in the 1990s when Rudy Giuliani took over as mayor and began making changes in the police force, and the crime rate declined dramatically. Over a period of time, the murder rate in New York went down 80%, 80%. Now, the lefties went crazy. First of all, they went crazy because basically their attitude is, how dare you lower the crime rate without our permission? You know, that's their attitude. Unless we get our cut of the action, we're not interested. Certain publications went berserk. The New Yorker magazine started running crazy pieces on what was happening in New York. The first one claiming that this was all the result not of Rudy Giuliani, but of a revolt against drug dealers. Now that ended with no one could find a single revolt against drug dealers.
Right.
And then they went to the argument that it's happening in New York, but it's really happening all over the country. I remember that was Jesse Jackson's line. It's happening all over. Until somebody with a degree in statistics looked at the numbers and said, no, it's only really happening in New York, but because New York is so large in population that the numbers from New York distort the national averages. And so people assumed it was going down all over. But when they looked at individual cities, no, it was New York. And the third conclusion they came to, and this is always where the left goes, always in every one of these situations, they said, yes, the crime rate is going down, but New York is being turned into a fascist city. The word fascist is their last resort.
Right.
Now, I did not see any Nazis walking through Central Park during that period. I really didn't. I looked for them. I was in disguise, but I didn't see them.
They don't go into Chicago on Friday nights either to kill people.
No, they really don't.
Once upon a time, they did try to march, as you were telling me the other day off the phone. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, once upon a time, they did march, and it created a big scene and a Supreme Court case and all of that. So, yes, once upon a time, there were Nazis who would march through that neighborhood that apparently had a rich history in all the problems in World War II with Jewish Americans and all of that. I can't think of the word right now that they call that terrible thing that happened in Holocaust. I'm sorry, for a minute there, I drew a blank.
Right.
Apparently, there were many relatives there of people from the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And so they were like, in your face, we're going to march through here. They got away with it because we live in a country we live. but not, you know, that's not what's happening in the black neighborhood in Chicago. There aren't any people with, you know, Trump hats walking in on Friday night killing people. And yet the governor, in disgraceful governor, comes out and says, well, you know, this is a time for action. I think he's a little late, though.
He is. You know, they come out with these traditional cliches, then nothing happens because they feel people will forget. You know, I've looked at that situation in Chicago, having lived in the city, and my feeling is that I don't know the law here. I have to say, I don't know if it varies from state to state, but I remember that in the early 1960s, during I think it was 1967, during Lyndon Johnson's term as president, there was a riot in Detroit, and he sent in troops. Now, if we can send in troops, if the president has the authority under the Constitution to, for example, federalize the National Guard and send them in to put down a riot, he would certainly have that power to protect citizens who are in grave danger. Again, I don't know the law, and I don't know how it would operate, but if it were possible, I would certainly think that a president of the United States could call to active duty National Guard MP companies, military police companies, and give them the assignment of walking children to school in the morning and making sure they get back safely at night. I mean, the safety of children comes first. Now, again, I'm sure that would be challenged in court by somebody, and it is never the kind of thing that any mayor asks for, because it means the mayor isn't doing the job and outside forces have to come in. But if that's what it takes to save lives, I am all for it. These young black children are just targets. You find these horrible stories of young black kids doing nothing wrong who were just shot in their home, shot on the stoop outside, or shot walking to school, and a few have happened in the last week. And what is amazing is the hypocrisy of people who have been going around for the last 3 years saying Black Lives Matter, and yet this happens every day in America, and they don't care. The level of hypocrisy is unbelievable.
Oh, it's unbelievable. See, I was thinking, though, when President Biden got in, that some of these Democrat mayors or governors would ask for support now, because before they didn't want to do it with President Trump because they didn't want to have to admit publicly that President Trump was right. But figuring that with Biden in the White House, that they would be more acceptable to outside help, you know, bringing in troops. I mean, if there's a city in the United States that could use a few troops on the weekend, it's Chicago. I mean, that city is I don't even know what the word is for that city anymore. And now you have the same problem in Minneapolis and in other places, too, where it's just totally out of control.
New York about 10 years ago was the safest large city in America, thanks to the work of Mayor Giuliani and Mayor Bloomberg. I don't know where it stands in statistics because we were so successful for a while, but I mean, people just are frightened to death of the criminal element. That there are people who actually say with a straight face, well, it's only in certain areas, as if these areas don't count, as if there are no people who live there. But the scenes are often now caught on videotape, which is a new phenomenon in this country, where you can actually see the crime being committed on many of the surveillance cameras that are stationed in New York, and you may be absolutely certain that the response of the far left to that will be, well, maybe we shouldn't have so many surveillance cameras.
Right.
We are a fascist city. We're fascist. The Nazis are in charge. But what is happening in New York is so dramatically different from what happened only 10 years ago that it's really a different city. And what many people don't realize is that there is a time factor in this. Over a period of time, it wears a city down.
Oh, absolutely.
I was speaking just a couple of weeks ago to a former, retired now, banker who studied New York as part of his banking career, and he said, New York has been in decline for decades. There have been exceptions when it has begun to fight back, but those exceptions are always followed by another decline. And I don't know if this city can really survive as an important center of the arts, an important center of commerce, if conditions continue, because so much of New York's economy is built on tourism, people visiting, people coming to live from foreign countries. And why? Who in the world would want to visit New York when Broadway is dying because of the pandemic and because of the crime, when many restaurants have closed, when you can't really walk outside at night without being afraid? The city will lose its character, and I think it already has. And what's going to happen is other cities will begin to grow, but in other parts of the country. I think that there are parts of Tennessee that are booming. Nashville is booming. There are parts of Texas that are booming. Florida is has become just a model of a state on the rise, and New York will be left to what New York is becoming.
Yes, no, you're right. I mean, that's the sad thing about New York, that everybody always wanted to visit New York, but now it's becoming more and more of a challenge to visit New York because of the crime. Well, one big story that I want to get into, Bill, this week is the talk of President Biden, the frustration, I guess, that people within the Democrat Party are having with him. Now,
yes.
I think a lot of that frustration, you know, when you're at 36% in the latest poll, I guess you're going to frustrate a lot of people when you're at that level. But I think what we're also seeing, Bill, is that the people in the left, the Democrats, really, they don't know. They've gotten so used, let me put it this way, they've gotten so used to having justices and judges do their bidding that now they don't know what to do when they have to go to the state legislature and argue on behalf of something. You know, the other day I was watching somebody on TV saying that the American people, you know, are against Roe v. Wade or the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And my reaction was, well, that's a great opportunity for you then. Because if that's the case, you're going to win a lot of support at the state legislatures. You may end up in a better position with Roe v. Wade than you were before.
That's
but
right.
They don't seem to see it that way. They see everything as being taken away, the other opinion on the EPA. I mean, now they're saying that, you know, the Supreme Court justice is 130 air, which, of course, has nothing to do with that, the decision. The decision was about an EPA under President Obama completely out of control.
That's right. Yes, isn't that remarkable that they're going to ruin our air? We're going to die because of the Supreme Court. I feel half dead already. And it had nothing to do with that. It had to do, as you exactly said, with the fact that an agency overstepped its bounds in engaging in actions that were not covered by the legislation that was involved and making up their own laws, in effect. And the Supreme Court said, stop it. And that's all it did. But we now have a hysteria about the court. I do fear the Democrats may try to pack it, and they may be successful unless the if the Democrats win the Senate in November, even if they don't have the House, as I said earlier in the program, they can do an enormous amount of harm because that's where the Senate is, where judges are confirmed, and it is possible for the Democrats to attempt to pack the court. Would they be successful? I don't know. I have to believe there are enough Democrats out there who are sane enough to know that it's a terrible idea. But we don't know that.
No, we don't know that. But some of these Democrats, if you notice, a lot of the Democrats who are running for re-election in the Senate, they all seem to be reading the same script, you know, that
if
the Republicans win, you know, the extremists are back and, you know, they're going to be, everything is going to be the extreme. But I don't see this working, Bill, because I see more and more. I'm not saying the country is re-falling in love with President Trump, because I don't think it ever fell in love with him. But
No. There
does seem to be a sense of, you know, maybe the guy was pretty successful. You know, what he said turned out to be true. Whether it's the gasoline, whether it's the border, it's hard to listen to what President Trump used to say about those things and not conclude that he knew what he was talking about, Bill.
Well, yes, true. Look, I think I'm very, very divided within myself on whether Trump should run again. I think there are benefits. I think there are demerits. I fear that if he does run again, the American press will gang up on him on him in such ways that he possibly couldn't overcome it. I do think the Republican Party would probably be better off looking toward the future, but I don't know. I mean, it's such an odd time. And also, look at the fact that President Biden is scheduled to be in office for another 2.5 years. That is a long time, and I don't know if this country can take it. I think, you know, that we may need some change to the presidential system that allows for the several states to demand and get a midterm election for president, as they have in other countries. They have snap elections.
Yes.
They have elections that are called by the parliament. I would favor going somewhat in that direction under very, very close controls, because we don't want to lose the stability of our system. But we're in a situation now that is unique. I don't recall any situation that the American people knew about where the president was dreadfully sick or incapable or does not seem to be aware of what's going on, and the vice president is almost useless and is perceived that way even within her own party.
Right.
We did have the situation with Woodrow Wilson when he was president and had a stroke, and it was kept from the American people, and his wife basically ran the White House, but that was a situation where there was no information available. Here we see before our eyes what is happening, and I think the numbers indicate that the American people really feel we need a new president. And we need, and they cannot certainly be enthusiastic about Kamala Harris. And so what do? We really don't have a system for dealing with a situation like this.
No, we don't. Well, the 25th Amendment is the only one, but that would require the cabinet, I guess, would have to come together. And then they would have to walk over to President Biden and say, look, we the majority of us, think that you should leave or resign or whatever. But doesn't that require some kind of a physical disability? I mean, I always understood the 25th Amendment that it was in the case that you had a, for lack of a better description, a vegetable in the White House, meaning who couldn't function.
Who could not function. That's right, that the president was not in control of things. Yes, and the problem is who would become president? Kamala Harris. That's the problem. You know,
well, that may be what's holding back the 25th. That may be the reason
so.
They don't want to do it, Bill.
I think so. The ideal situation would be to prevail upon her to resign the vice presidency, and the president would then presumably pick a qualified vice president, and the president would then himself resign. But that would require Biden's cooperation and probably the cooperation of his wife, and I don't see that happening.
Well, maybe under your scenario, they'll put Joe Manchin as vice president, but then they lose the Senate if they do that. So, because then Manchin would be replaced by a Republican senator, so the Republicans would automatically have a majority in the Senate. But it is frightening. It is frightening. But what is more frightening to me, Bill, is the inability of this administration to just look at the facts.
Yes.
And make a decision. I mean, this is like you're flying through a storm, 30,000 feet up in the air, and you're flying through the storm, and everybody's telling the captain, look, why don't you go around the storm? And he says, no, we got to stick to this plan. I mean, it's crazy what we're seeing. I mean,
That's
anybody
right.
with any kind of intelligence knows that if you produce more oil, the prices at the least will drop.
Of
but
course.
They won't do that, Bill.
They won't do it because they are under the control of environmental freaks and fanatics, some of whom have a lot of money. I just thought of a way to do this, to force Kamala Harris out of office. Kamala Harris is married to an entertainment lawyer, and I think that they should go to her and say, look, get Kamala a television series where she plays the president. And she won't really be the president, but she'll be one on TV and make a lot of money, and you could arrange it, and you could be the producer, and you keep her out of trouble. And then the post will be blank, and they could appoint a real vice president. I'm joking, obviously, but, you know,
yes,
she could do that. She could play the president on television and get all kinds of residuals. That's something. I mean, she
right,
wouldn't
that would
she
be,
wouldn't be
at least would be a happy ending for her. Because yes. I don't think this is going to end, you know, very well.
No, it's
for
not.
Vice President Harris right now. One more thing I wanted to say, Bill, just a quick reaction from you on this. Were you upset? I assume you were, but because I was. Were you upset with the way some people were taking shots at the United States on July 4th? I mean, that's...
Oh, disgraceful. Disgraceful.
I mean, you got these people like on ESPN. I thought that was supposed to be a sports network.
Not anymore.
But you got these people on ESPN writing these things. And even NPR, I guess, didn't read the Declaration of Independence this year. That's what they tell me. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, yeah, we can, you know, we can have a conversation about the problems. But when you get to the level of hating the country, hey, man, you can leave and go somewhere else. Nobody's going to stop you from leaving, Bill.
Well, you know, that's a thought that I think is going through a lot of people's minds. I really do. I fear that if things continue the way they are in the United States, that we are going to start to lose some very important people to other countries, especially research scientists. If I were the minister for science in India right now, I would say, look, this is very inexpensive for us. Why don't we make offers to American Nobel laureates, American members of the National Academy of Sciences, saying we can offer you a better life. We'll pay you more. We'll set you up in the best labs. You'll be living in India. We will give you plenty of assistance, and you don't have to put up with the chaos in the United States. And
right.
You want to know something? I think there will be people who would take that, and not a few people. This is something that I think we better start worrying about. We are in competition with other countries. And when you look at the chaos on college campuses and the extremism on college campuses, and then many of these campuses are in big cities where the professor might be afraid to walk outside, and he gets a phone call from a foreign country saying, we will triple your salary, we'll give you everything you need. You can go back to the U.S. on trips all you want. That person might say to his spouse or her spouse, you know, this looks like a very good deal. And
right.
I'm afraid
yeah.
of that. I remember it's happened before. It's happened
mm-hmm.
before. It happened in the 1930s when scientists left Germany and they came
right.
to the United States. Science is very transportable. And this is something we better start worrying about.
I think so. I think you're right about that. But I found a lot of the criticism of the United States very offensive. I thought it was very cynical on the part of some of these people. On one hand, they talk about how terrible things are. And then on the other hand, they have the freedom to criticize the country. And apparently they don't make that connection, Bill. These people apparently
no.
don't you know, it's such a simple connection for me to make because I – as you know, came here from a communist country. But if you can criticize the country you're living in, what that says to me, it's a pretty good country, Bill.
It sure is. And that's the point. You know, somebody once made a joke. It was a Russian guy who came to the United States and became a comedian. And I forgot, this is many years ago. And he said, well, the countries are similar, the Russia and the United States. Both countries have freedom of speech. He said, the difference is in America, we have freedom after the speech.
That's,
and I always thought
right.
that was a wonderful line.
Right. No, I think it is, because a lot of these people that you watch on TV and they criticize the country, I mean, they're so ignorant because they get to criticize it without realizing that in most countries in the world that – what you would not be allowed to criticize the country. Well, Bill, we'll do it on Monday next week. We'll be back
okay.
to our Monday schedule. I appreciate very much your hanging in with us here for a couple of days as we had a few things going on in our life, including a new granddaughter that had a lot
yes,
to do
I
with the delay. Yes, so little Sophia is now part of the family.
Wonderful, wonderful, and congratulations. Of course, I've been aware of it, but you now have three beautiful grandchildren.
That's right, and they all have great names.
They sure do.
All right, Bill, have a wonderful day. My best to you, and keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you, Silvio. Looking forward to next time.
All right, thank you so much. Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, a little late this week because of all of these other things going on, but... It's never too late to get in touch with our friend Bill Katz. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Very warm in Dallas, very warm in Texas, but that's just the way it goes around here. Bye-bye, everybody.